War Room, Pandemic. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
But we got to start with 3 November. We have a special tomorrow, the 3 November movement. Dr. Peter Navarro and myself will be co-hosting. It's going to go get to the bottom of 3 November and exactly those patriots right now that are driving this across the country. Remember, it's 50 states, full forensic audits, right? Not going to stop till we get to them all. Dr. Peter Navarro has joined me for a little pregame here today. We want to start with America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani. And I've got to start with Dr. Navarro's favorite topic, where's Hunter? And the hard drive for Hunter. And by the way, the hard drive for Hunter, which we broke here, poor Jack Maxey, we got banned from Twitter for putting out the hard drive from hell. I said, you come for the porn, you stay for the compromise by the Chinese party.
Note to Bannon, the reason why everybody else out there in mainstream media land thinks it's a slow news cycle is because every topic is forbidden for them to talk about.
That's true. That's the
can't
point.
Talk about the stolen election.
Can't talk about the vaccine.
Can't talk about Hunter Biden. can't talk about the aid army.
And you can't talk about the invasion of the southern border.
Nope.
You can't talk about the church.
Off limits.
And boy, the apes are just these crazy guys. We got bringing America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani. Rudy, I want to start with, we're cramped for time, but I got to start with Hunter Biden. You're the guy they brought the disc to. You had it out there. You went to the FBI. You went to everybody to bar. The story in Politico today, the Justice Department made a conscious decision, and this came from Barr. They're talking about the U.S. attorney down in Delaware. They refused to move forward quickly, sir, because they didn't want to get it into a presidential election. Rudy, you read the article in Politico. What are your thoughts about Hunter Biden? Was there a cover-up?
Oh, 100%. First of all, the article is wrong. They had the information on Hunter Biden in great detail a year before the election. Well, not quite a year. 10 months before the election.
I thought it was December of 2019. They picked it up from the guy December of 2019, correct?
Yeah, and I sat down with them and turned over to them a 40-page outline of everything that I had gathered, plus many, many supporting documents. In January of 2020, the U.S. Wow. attorney in Pittsburgh was very enthusiastic about investigating it, realized the obvious crimes that were laid out. I mean, it's hard, you know, if I say this, they're going to say, well, I'm biased or whatever, but I do know prosecutions probably better than anything else. There are easily 10, 12 prosecutable crimes on that hard drive where you almost wouldn't have to go beyond the hard drive to prove it. I mean, for example, the false statement on the application for a gun. The abuse of children you just have to talk to the psychiatrist that they describe, and Hunter admits that he was a danger to the children. And there are the pictures there that show. There's the admission that he gave 50% to his father for 30 years. I mean, that's a heck of a statement. And that explains the whole thing. It explains the 30 years of the criminal Biden family. These relatives, this money wasn't for them. The money was for Joe. They took care of Joe's expenses. And then he got over that 50% in cash. And the FBI never bothered to do things like subpoena the records of his homes. They never went to look at how his homes were purchased or how his bank account was arranged. I know prosecutors in Ukraine that wanted the Treasury Department to look at offshore accounts. And even under a Republican, he wouldn't do it.
Perfect. Hang on a second, though. But now we know from Politico, also in the summer, they refused to do it. Chris Wray, a Trump appointee, and Bill Barr, his attorney general, both had these facts, both had the details of it. Why did Chris Wray and Bill Barr, why did they not go for it? Why did they suppress this, sir?
You know, I can't answer that. It's mind-boggling, and it's a terrible dereliction of duty. Think about the fact that they had a complete defense to the impeachment. On that hard drive, right? The hard drive certainly demonstrates that Joe Biden was substantially involved with all the foreigners from Ukraine, knew all about them, lied when he said he didn't know anything about the Ukraine. I mean, he had dinner with them at Milano's. He had meetings with them in his office.
Hey, Rudy, tomorrow, I'm going to go off on Bill Barr, okay? But the short story here is it the pattern here? Remember, you got to always remember he's a Bushy, right? He's a traditional Bushy. Never should have been allowed inside the perimeter. But if you look at all the things he didn't do, like he didn't prosecute anybody in the Russiagate scandal. He refused to investigate election fraud and then doubled down by saying after not investigating, there was nothing there. He wouldn't investigate the Hunter Biden laptop issue. And now we know in Pennsylvania that there was, he was asked.
McSwain
was asked. So I'm going to do a longer version. But
yes, tomorrow. But hold it. But this is what's key. McSwain's letter. Yeah. In Philadelphia, because that's where Rudy was up there. He couldn't understand why the U.S. attorney. Now we know Barr wouldn't let him.
That's right. He actually said it.
Also, we know now that the guy saying I couldn't go after Hunter, that's a Maine justice decision. This is Bill Barr. I want to go to these books, Rudy, because we only got so much time. Michael Bender of the Wall Street Journal, Phil Rucker of the Washington Post, Michael Wolff, the Independent. They've written three books. They're all quite derogatory about you and really the work of Peter Navarro after the election. All anonymous source. I don't see any sources in there that are quoted. Rudy, your first take, at least of what you've seen in these books, sir.
I got it completely. And I'm not an anonymous source. I'm on the record. It comes from the people who lost the election for him.
And who are they?
Who never should have been.
Well,
I'll name them. Names. I mean, it was Justin Clark and it was Stepien. Stepien shouldn't have been running a presidential campaign. His claim to fame was Bridgegate. And he worked for me in my campaign and screwed up Iowa. So, I mean, Stepien is a second or third rate political guy who shouldn't be running a political campaign. It was way over his head and he tried to fake it. And he doesn't have particularly great integrity.
Your statement, Rudy, was really interesting off the air, which you basically said that these books were not written by the authors. They were written by the leakers who lost the election. That's the takeaway, who didn't close on the win.
Hang on for a second, Rudy. The reason we have Arizona today and the reason we have Georgia and the reason that we're turning this thing around and the 3 November project, we're going to get to the bottom of it, is because of two individuals and two individuals only with a lot of supporting characters. Rudy Giuliani and Peter Navarro. And I was one of the supporting characters with Boris and Bernie Kerik and others in a support role.
Let me repeat that. You're right. Peter,
no, yeah, no, I, come on. There was a lot of support. Hang on, I'm robbing this train. It's Rudy Giuliani and Peter Navarro with a lot of supporting characters, and all the supporting characters' names will come out there. But we would not be where we are if you guys didn't stand in the breach on November 4th, 5th, 6th, and then with those dark days in November and December to push this forward and to do it rationally. You know, not crazy lawsuits. Everybody said it. If you look at the facts, you look what Kerik and you guys in the affidavits, the railhead in your report. If you look at Georgia and you look at Arizona, it's exactly what you guys said it was going to be. The nation owes you a debt of gratitude. And you're absolutely correct. These books are anonymous sources by the exact people who were too gutless to close on a victory for Donald Trump, didn't have faith in him, walked away from him and stabbed him in the back. And we're going to be naming names and we're going to go through line by line of these books and give the special who said it, who turned on Trump, who put a knife in his back, and why we're in this situation today. And by the way, they're all going to be held. To me, these are crimes because we're in a situation now that crimes were committed. And Bill Barr knew this. Bill Barr blew you off, Peter Navarro. Bill Barr wouldn't take Rudy's call, blew Rudy off. Also, Milley. Milley's sitting there and saying, hey, I'm not going to support this thing. Milley, guess what? The receipts in Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania show Donald Trump was right. He was commander-in-chief. He was asking you to do your job. You got to be court-martialed and then crimes afterwards. You got to be in Leavenworth for 30 years. You're revolting. You are revolting, and you're going to Leavenworth, brother. Write that down, okay? Because these crimes are not going to go unanswered. Rudy Giuliani.
Well, I don't want to leave out Justin Clark because he was a lot worse than Stepien. Justin Clark was the lawyer for the campaign. He did a horrible job beforehand, didn't really bring the right lawsuits to anticipate it. When the president asked me to come in the day after the election, I walked in. They took about 3 hours. They were running around and hiding from me. I think Stepien was hiding under a desk because he's afraid of me. And Clark is afraid of me. And they all came in and I said, where are the papers? They didn't have any papers. They didn't anticipate anything. They had a group of lawyers. Some were good, some were bad. Clark and his lackey, Morgan, undercut the case in Pennsylvania deliberately. Unfortunately, the president really doesn't know this. And everything we did in spite of them. I mean, they actively told people not to cooperate with us. Actively, and then Justin Reamer, who was general counsel at the RNC, was caught actively interfering with us. We got a text in which he told people not to give information to me and Jenna. And also that Trump had lost, and it's better for the Republicans sometimes when we lose because the RNC can raise more money. That's a quote. I called up Rona at night with Boris was with me during this whole thing. And I said, Rona, he's got to be fired. She said, I'll take care of it in the morning. I said, well, you know, if you don't take care of it tonight, I will. I'll wake up the president. This guy's got to go right now because we got to send a signal. I got the same problem with Clark and Stepien and these people. They undercut us in Philadelphia. They undercut us in Michigan. I mean, they were telling people not to cooperate with us. We were going to lose. She fired him. The guy is back now as the general counsel of the RNC. Reema is back. Clark is working for the president. Stepien is working for the president. These people tried to kill him. I mean, Clark and Stepien checked out 4 weeks before the election. And all they were worried about was what kind of job they were going to get. And now they're going around, you know, selling their access to him, telling people we can get Trump's endorsement. I mean, so they're the people that leak. Good people don't leak. The people who really did their job, they don't talk to these these reporters.
Okay, we're going to get we're going to drill.
60 seconds.
I don't have 60 seconds. We're going to come to you after the break. Yeah. Rudy, what's your podcast? What's the topic that's coming up? How do people get to you on social media?
Well, the podcast this week is all about Hunter and Joe and how the money was exchanged. Yeah. How the money was exchanged. And right on the cover, when you go look at the podcast at rudyscommonsense.com, there's the text in Hunter's language. I want to emphasize to people there's not a single thing I said about this election that doesn't come from somebody else. Every single thing I said, what I just said about splitting the money 50-50, that's January 3rd, 2018, Hunter Biden to his daughter. The text is right on the front, and you can see it yourself. You don't have to listen
Rudy's
to any
comments,
of his lawyers.
Yeah.
You can see it yourself.
Rudy's Common Sense, real quickly, what's your Twitter handle? How do people follow you during the day?
Rudy'sCommonSense.com. You can get me in just Rudy Giuliani for Twitter.
Okay, and you got the Sunday morning show with Dr. Ryan. God bless you. God bless Dr. Ryan. Rudy Giuliani, American hero. Back in a moment.
War Room, Pandemic, with Stephen K. Bannon.
The epidemic is a demon, and we cannot let this demon hide.
War Room, Pandemic. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Peter K. Navarro in for Steve Bannon. He's going to be up at 11, hot as a firecracker here on Saturday. What I'm going to do now is just jump right in to the reports that I did. The background here is pretty simple. Trump wins the election on November 3rd. Biden steals it in the dead of night on November 4th. And ever since then, we've been fighting hard to figure out what happened and to fight back. So, Denver, show. Let's start off with the first slide. There's three volumes in the Navarro report. And the first one was called The Immaculate Deception. The way this worked is over the Thanksgiving holiday, I sat in my apartment and went over all sorts of stuff, came up with this slide here, the next slide, Denver, again. You can go full screen on it. Or that's nice, too. I like that. Yeah, that's good. So here's what we got, folks. We got the six battleground states, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin. This is where they stole the election from Donald Trump. If you look at the bottom of the slides, what you notice jumps out immediately is how slender the vote margins are, particularly in Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin. I mean, we're talking 10,000 votes in Arizona, 12 in Georgia, only 20 in Wisconsin. And even in Michigan, which is a large state, is only 150,000, right? So if you look at this matrix, basically, one matrix is worth 1,000 words. People talk about a fraud. What I found was these six different types of irregularities. Ballot mishandling, for example, is like counting ballots twice or taking in naked ballots where you got a ballot without an outer envelope, so you don't know if it's a legitimate thing. Contestable process files, that's stuff like not allowing observers to see the ballots are counted. Republican observers were just like terrorized, places like Detroit and Milwaukee. Voting machine irregularities, we've never been big voting machine guys here in the war room, but the stuff Sonny Borelli told you early in the hour should get our attention. If we go to the next slide, please. This is basically the art of the steal. Basically, after I published The Immaculate Deception, people are going, you know, like, wow, it's like that's a really complex operation to steal an election. And what was interesting from that Immaculate Deception report was, on the one hand, you observed all of these types of irregularities in most or all of the six battleground states, but each state in their own way had a different way of doing it, right? And so I got a lot of requests after the Immaculate Deception came out describing like what they did to actually ask me to investigate how they did it, okay? So that came through in the Art of the Steal report, okay, which is a little riff, as you may know, on President Trump's most famous book, The Art of the Deal, right? So if you go to the next slide, Denver, it's a little bigger chart here. Here's the what I call the grand stuff the ballot box strategy, right? So let's think about this. In Georgia, the cesspool of Georgia and their consent decree was like the poster child for this. It's like dramatically increase the number of absentee and mail-in ballots in the battleground states. And as the Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, and the Republican James Baker in their Carter-Baker Commission report has told us, absentee ballots are the quickest way to steal an election. So you dramatically increase those. At the same time, and this is like the subtle part of it, dramatically decrease ballot verification. And that, by doing that, they were able to tip the scales for the election. Now, how did they go about this? Let's go to the next slide, Denver. I'm going to work through the check marks indicate which of the six battleground states these things occurred. But, for example, they changed state laws through bills and referendum. The secretaries of state, many of whom were like George Soros puppets, changed the rules. They had court rulings, court interventions, and Mark Zuckerberg and George Soros effectively went in and privatized our election system using their big Zuckerbucks, as Michael Lindell likes to say, and effectively helped steal the election. Next slide, Denver. Now, here's the prong one, how they dramatically increased the absentee in mail-in ballots. They just relaxed the rules, particularly for things like signature matching. In Georgia, they went from a 6% rejection of ballots down to virtually zero. That was enough alone. The other way they did it, through these drop boxes and ballot harvesting, where they just like Milwaukee, this is Zuckerberg again, where they just be able to go to these drop boxes and stuff these drop boxes with potentially illegal ballots. And then the next slide, dramatically decrease the absentee and mail-in ballot verification. In the consent decree, it's like they had a clause in there that said you couldn't reject a ballot unless you had the approval of like five different layers of government. So they just like threw up their hands, legally counting naked ballots, increased ballot curing, all manner of things. So if you can, Denver, go absolutely to the last slide, which basically is the punchline. This is, yes, Denver is right on the money today. Here's what I found. It's like, this is what Steve likes to call the receipts, right? When I look across all the six battleground states, I found over 3 million potentially illegal ballots. And the Biden alleged victory margin was only about 300,000 ballots. So that's what I call a cheat ratio of about 10, right? And what we're seeing now with the activity in Arizona, the activity in Georgia, everything that's coming out now, based on the template of these reports, is showing that my numbers are right on. So now at 11 o'clock, we're coming back with Steve at the top of the show. We're going to talk a little bit more about it. But that is the big picture here. This election was stolen. Donald Trump won in a landslide. Cause we're taking down the CCP. Spread the word all through Hong Kong. We will fight till they're all gone. We rejoice when there's no more. Let's take down the CCP. Yeah, it's insignificant. Hey, note to Ali Velci, 70,000 more ballots received than requested. Just on that alone, you guys are lying through your teeth. That is like good cop, bad cop, hair on fire, comedy, tragedy. I'll throw it into clips. MSNBC can't figure out whether they want to scare you or make you laugh or anything in between. I'm going to let Stephen K. Bannon in the chat room sort this out. Steve, what's going on there, man? You're on assignment.
Here's the reason that we continue to show MSNBC, because at least they have enough respect for the audit and for this audience and for the war room posse to cover it. Unlike Fox, unlike Newsmax, these people now Hannity's telling us, oh, it doesn't make any difference. And they're going to talk a little bit about Georgia. No, that we're not going to let Fox get away with that. We're not going to let Newsmax get away with it. This is the most important story in the world. It's driven by dedicated patriots. The America First audit chat room and channel has just announced, I think last night, 25,000 new people. They had 50,000, 25,000 new people have onboarded in 3 days since we had Dave Clements, who's going to be on later, on the show. Look, they're in absolute panic mode. Rachel Maddow warned months ago when we got our hands on the ballots. And remember, everything that happened at the hearing the other day does not get down to the basic full forensic count that's going to be announced either this week or shortly after, because guess what? They're going to count them again just to make sure they're right. But everything we're hearing, there's a large delta between actual physical ballots they have and recorded votes. And that's going to be announced. I'm sure Karen Fann is going to send some missive over to Maricopa County about exactly what's going on. They're in full meltdown. The railhead of this movement is in Arizona, but it's spreading. It's not just metastasizing to Georgia, which Dr. Peter Navarro has told us from the beginning is the biggest cesspool out there, maybe only topped by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We know now that Mastriano, they're fighting in the Philadelphia Board of Electors, don't want to turn off any information. Shapiro, the attorney general, who's running for governor, doesn't want to turn any information. Joe Biden has to go up there. And this audience and this show forced Joe Biden, as a forcing function, to defend his legitimacy. Rachel Maddow couldn't do it. No surrogates could do it. He had to defend his legitimacy by going through how all these other audits were so great and he's the legitimate winner. Well, we're going to see that. And right now, the 3 November movement, the only thing we have to focus on is adding people to these chat rooms, adding people to this crowdsourcing, get 1 million people, right? And that is, we're going to audit every state, every congressional district, I think every state legislature vote. We are a massive majority in this country. There's no doubt about it. Because a guy yesterday on our show told me, Dr. Peter Navarro said, did Trump win, Dr. Navarro?
In a landslide, sir. Let me put a little clip in here. So David Clemens, join on Telegram. Search America First Audits, right? At America's First Audits or at America First Audits chat. This is amazing. Steve, you said like 25,000 more joined just in a matter of a day or two. Hey, Steve, one thing. It's like, Where's Reince Priebus in Wisconsin? Wisconsin is kind of like one of the easiest cases to prove. It's all in my report. You've covered it extensively on the show. I thought Reince was going to ride to the sound of the guns here. What's going on in Wisconsin?
Well, I think it's beyond Reince now. They just had a state legislature come out yesterday and saying, hey, we've got to have a full forensic audit. Listen, you're going to have this audience needs to pound through emails, text messages, phone calls, their offices in Pennsylvania and in Wisconsin. Wisconsin, as you know, Peter, is the lowest hanging fruit of all. That's the one that's most obvious because although they have a lot of progressive there, they have very tight voting laws and the clerks change them. Wisconsin, Arizona, yes. Georgia, and Wisconsin are the ripe fruit that will fall immediately. In Pennsylvania and Michigan, which is the cheating so overwhelming, you're going to have a dogfight given how tough those political establishments in Detroit and Philadelphia are. You're going to be in court and you're going to be battling, but eventually we'll get to all of them. But most importantly, we need a full forensic audit of all 50 states. We need to get to the bottom of the corruption, not just of the Democratic Party, but their enablers, which is the rhinos. The standard stock country club Republican has allowed this to happen. Look at the Patriots in Arizona. What you have done, what you have found has been historic, and it's going to change the direction of American history. And that's why I got to tell you, the inferno we're about to go into is so much harder than what we've come through so far. So this is why people have to hunker down. People have to join these crowdsourcing groups. It is now time for the Patriots to put their shoulder to the wheel. You've got a couple of guests the rest of this show that are going to be amazing. But the intellectual construct of this was done by Dr. Peter Navarro in the days after after November 3rd because he understands, being a Harvard PhD in economics and a guy that his entire life has worked on statistics and knows statistical analysis, he knew immediately, like every hedge fund guy in the world I know, mathematically it was impossible for Joe Biden to win. Mathematically impossible. And that's data-based, yeah, evidence-based, and science-based. Dr. Peter Navarro.
Quick question here, Steve. Finally, Fox came out and acknowledged election fraud based on the numbers coming out. Tucker Carlson, outlier, or do you think
outlier?
Turn the tide at Fox, because so far they're canceling anybody who talks about this stuff.
Tucker's fantastic, and he talked about Georgia the other night. But quite frankly, we're not interested in Georgia. We're interested in Arizona. Fox, and this is the Murdochs. That's who pays their paycheck. The Murdochs changed the entire direction of election night when they called it at 9:30 at night. It was outrageous when they did it, and they're going to be proven. You know, three people that don't want to see these results next week is General Milley, Mike Pence, and Rupert Murdoch. Okay, the Murdochs don't want anything. They want to pretend Arizona's not happening. Well, guess what? It is happening, and that's going to be a physical fact, right, that you're not going to be able to avoid. So once Brett Baer said yesterday on the news show after the great hearing the other day, oh, there's nothing there. Same thing, Ali Vesha, a couple hundred votes, not going to make a difference. No, Brett. I know you're a high two-digit IQ, but your producers better get focused. What's happening in – yeah, you're just a newsreader. What's happening in Arizona is going to change the course of American history, and it's all driven by a populist movement. This is a leaderless movement that led by patriots, and you had heroes like Senate President Karen Fann, Gunny, State Senator Sonny Borelli, and others, Mark Fincham, patriots out there that were ridiculed, mocked, and you're starting to see guys like Bronovich, the Attorney General, all of a sudden Raffensperger in Georgia's got old-time religion. He wants to fire the Fulton County guys. He wants to put it in receivership. You know, after he lied and lied to President Trump and after he lied to 60 Minutes, it's too late for these rats to come back, okay? The people are taking charge of this, and this is what's so powerful about this grassroots movement, these chat rooms, crowdsource the information, full forensic audits on all 50. You're going to see that Dr. Peter Navarro is right, that Donald Trump won in a massive landslide, because you're going to get into California, you're going to get into Illinois, you're going to get into New York, and you're going to see the massive amount of votes that Donald Trump actually got in those states instead of the suppressed votes that you see. These Chicago, New York, L.A., they're corrupt. They're yes. just as corrupt as Atlanta. They're just as corrupt as Philadelphia. They're just as corrupt as Detroit. And, yes, they're just as corrupt as Maricopa County. Remember, this is nonpartisan. Maricopa County and the senior officials in Georgia are Republicans, and they're white. This is not about race. This is not about gender. This is not about political affiliation. This is the Uniparty, their corruption, their continued corruption. And this is why it's so breathtaking that the American people, and I got to tell you, those patriots out there that did the count on the floor itself are the true heroes of this.
The interesting development in Arizona for me this week was the uncovering of the login server data, right? They found like tens of thousands of logins to erase data. I always thought like Maricopa County, the Republicans there were basically having the back of the John McCainites. But I think there might be real criminal misconduct here, Steve, because they don't want us to get our hands on that login data. And
no way.
For them to erase it is a criminal thought. Take us out on this block, Steve. Thoughts on that?
Thoughts on that, you've got to get to the bottom, obviously. But the buried lead, Dr. Navarro, to quote you, it's the canvas, not the count. We got to get the canvas done in Arizona. We got to get the canvas done in Georgia. And then we're going to canvas California, Illinois, and New York. You're going to see Donald Trump, as Peter Noir told us, not just one. He wanted a massive landslide. We're the vast majority in this country. We've got to start acting like it. We got to start putting our shoulder to the wheel and say, you're not going to stand in the way. We don't want to hear you have to say it's all nonsense. We're the vast majority. We're going to prove it by data, evidence, and science. Dr. Peter Navarro.
All right, my brother. We're bringing in Seth Kessel. Stick around if you want. Otherwise, it's a great day here in America. We are going to get to the bottom of this with the November 3rd movement and the power of the American people. Spread the word all through Hong Kong. We will fight till they're all gone. We rejoice when there's no more. Let's take down the CCP. Peter K. Navarro sitting in for Stephen K. Bannon, who you just heard in the last segment. We are going to get a gentleman up now, we hope, Seth Kessel. He's a former Army captain in military intelligence. Let's not bury that lead. And what he's been doing is kind of a forensic investigation of voting patterns across the country. And I think what's interesting about it, from what I can see, is it dovetails nicely with the kind of work I did with the Navarro reports. And if we can bring in Seth Denver, see if we got him on the line.
No, we don't.
Not yet? Okay. So here's the issue. What we're going to do when we get Seth up is we're going to talk about how, if you look at kind of historic Democrat voting patterns and kind of compare them to what happened, you're going to see like a dramatic, inexplicable push in what happened in the 2020 election. And this is the kind of thing that we need to understand. We need the receipts, right? And we need as much statistical evidence. When I did my report, in the first volume of the report, there were a number of very strange statistical anomalies that we observed, particularly in the hours after midnight of November 3rd. And what we're finding now in Arizona, for example, we have 70,000 more ballots received than requested. Let's think about that for a minute. It's like okay, so X number of ballots were supposed to come in from the people who they were sent to or requested, right? And you've got a number over and above that. And that simply shouldn't happen. There are also kinds of things where just by lax rules, whether it was Michigan or Pennsylvania or Arizona, where they allowed voters to come in and vote sometimes after the election, contrary to state law. So how are we doing here? We got Seth on the line?
Working on it.
Yeah. Bottom line here is what we're trying to do across the six battleground states and now out to the chat rooms around the rest of the country for the 50 states, is to get back to all of the different kinds of election irregularities that we have. So let me talk a little bit about what I found in my report and just do a little deeper dive into the outright voter fraud. So one of the things, obviously, is the dead voters. It's like, okay, people dead voted. Okay, it's like the Sixth Sense election, if you remember that movie. But the bigger problem here is what we call the ghost voters. And this is where I think a lot of the fraud can easily happen. A ghost voter is when you get a ballot coming in from an address. Let's say Jane Doe is coming in, and you count that ballot, and then you actually go to the address, and there's no Jane Doe. That would be your quintessential ghost voter. We're going to bring Seth Kessel in now on the phone, I assume, here. Seth, are you there?
Good morning, Dr. Navarro. I'm here.
How are you, sir? Okay, the floor is yours. Let's focus initially on Arizona and Georgia, because these are the ones that are specifically in play, and then we'll go around the world. But tell our audience kind of what your statistical approach is.
So I'm a 30,000-foot data analyst. I'm going to go over the entire county, the entire country, county by county, as we have slides that show that. And I'm able to see, based on historical trends, some of these going back over 120 years, based on population growth, based on party registration, where that's available, and that's available in places like Arizona, and able to quickly identify where the data is off, where the trends are off, where the trends have been reversed or interrupted against what registration numbers may say, and really identify locally for these audit groups where the biggest issues are and what the best low-hanging fruit to chase is, so we have fruitful audit. And in Arizona, people need to look back at history and understand about Arizona. It's one of the biggest Republican strongholds that there's been since World War II, won by the Democrat candidate two times in 1948 and 1996. But in 1996, when Bob Dole managed to lose Arizona, he still carried Maricopa County. Trump carried Maricopa County in 2016 with fewer votes than Mitt Romney had in 2012. So to believe the number that's certified in Arizona, you'd have to believe that Donald Trump decided to gain a Republican record of 248,000 net new additional votes in 2020, just so he could turn around and lose this county for the first time in 72 years. So what we have on the Biden increase column, 338,000 vote increase over Hillary Clinton's increase and over her total, just so they can win the state by 10,000 votes. So from a data perspective, that's what you see, is they needed every single one of these votes, the stuff that the cyber ninjas talked about the other day, just to get over the top. So that is why people looking at Maricopa County without a knowledge of their history should understand why people are in arms about these numbers.
Do you look at, Seth, do you look at how the votes for president track with some of the down ballot stuff?
Absolutely. I think that if we really laid all the cards on the table, the entire country, I think you would see a pickup of at least five Senate seats for Republicans. You would have Perdue and Georgia. People aren't talking about Perdue, but on November the 3rd, he was pushed out of the 50% threshold by about 14,000 votes. So he would have won on election night if not for the massive amount of fraud that occurred in Georgia. And then you have Jason Lewis in Minnesota. You have Mark Ronchetti in New Mexico. You have probably Martha McSally in Arizona, and absolutely John James in Michigan, plus the House would have flipped Republican as well. There's a couple governorships. Dan Forrest would have been the governor of North Carolina. That's a state that few are talking about, much like Texas, where the numbers are just tremendously off. But because Trump still carried those states, it's stuff that's really ignored, which is why we have these audits everywhere.
Yeah, this is why I think the work David Clements is doing on going around to all 50 states and get audits done is going to be so important. We're going to be talking with him soon. What's your take on Georgia? Is it worse? What's of the six battleground states, what's the one that jumps out at you the most in terms of anomalies?
They're all pretty bad. Like you've said on the show many times, Wisconsin is the easiest one to prove, given that most of the point fraud occurred in two counties. Nevada's the same way, since most of their votes come from Clark, but I would say the one that disgusts me the most is Pennsylvania. And the reason why is because they have a very predictive indicator of the trajectory of their next election, which is party registration. The Democratic Party in the Midwest, in the industrial Midwest, the Rust Belt, as we call it, is going extinct. Republicans had a net new voter registration advantage of 21-1 in the last 4 years, which perfectly indicated Trump's victory in 2016.
21-1?
Yeah, 242,000 new Republicans registered, 12,000 Democrats. So 60
in
counties.
In the state of Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania.
Is that in the state?
Pennsylvania was not a nail-biter state. This was an easy 300,000-400,000 vote state. So that one makes me the sickest. Georgia's pretty bad.
So let's stay on that. Stay on that for a minute. When you do your county by county, what pops out at you there? Where was the all counties stole, or was it Philly County or what? Where Bucks County? Where what's?
It was a 67 county operation. So you have an operation to shave Trump's totals in the rural counties and in the suburban counties and in these Democrat Siberia counties where they have absolutely no support anymore. So instead of Trump having 80% margins or 80 to 20 kind of wins, you have 65 to 35 kind of wins. I did a show recently where I looked at Butler County, Westmoreland, Luzerne County. And by the way, Luzerne County has gone to the winner of Pennsylvania in every election since 1936, regardless of party. And then York County. And just in those four counties alone, I estimated that Trump's margins were cut by 62,000 votes in a state where he supposedly lost it by 80,000 votes. So it was a 67-county operation. He still managed to trend a few counties out in the West more Republican, but only 20 counties overall were more Republican than they were in 2016, despite 60 of them becoming more Republican in registration, which was perfectly predictive in 2016 that he would flip the state.
Could you account for this simply through a higher voter turnout?
That is the excuse. So every statistical indicator that's been good for decades, if not more than a century, is being explained away as high voter turnout. We know that the coronavirus pandemic was exaggerated to allow for relaxing the integrity of the voting laws, especially protecting absentee ballots. But you'd also in Pennsylvania need to believe that when Barack Obama, after 8 years of a Republican administration that finished very poorly, with all the wins at the back, all the unions supporting him, record minority turnout, soft Republicans, that Trump is not only going to go blow by Obama's total in a state with a declining population, but also Joe Biden is going to go blowing past Trump's total in a state where the Democratic Party is massively being walloped, and they're actually still being walloped to this day.
Where are you taking this analysis next?
It's going all over the audits, the audit channels, the America First audits. We have a ton of traction. People in all these states that nobody's talking about, places like Washington State, Oregon, places that we've kind of written off as so-called blue states where there's tremendous anomalies. So Trump up 363,000 votes in Washington State when the Republicans couldn't budge for three straight elections. So there's massive traction, new big tent type voters, but of
all
course
right, Seth, do me a favor. I want to hang on. We're going to take a break now, but phone back in. We're still having a little trouble with your line. I'm bringing David Clemens in for the next segment. I'd like to maybe have you interact with him if we can get your phone working. This is the War Room, Steve Bannon's War Room. We'll be back forthwith.
War Room, Pandemic, with Stephen K. Bannon.
The epidemic is a demon, and we cannot let this demon hide.
War Room, Pandemic. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Peter K. Navarro sitting in for Stephen K. Bannon. And what we're going to do now is jump right to a gentleman at the Concord Bridge here. Basically helping to organize the grassroots. I'm going to bring in David Clemens now. And first of all, you have some news, David, about the growth and the numbers. Talk to us a little bit first about that, and then I want to walk you through the mechanics of how people can actually get involved and what they can expect when they log in and through the Telegram site.
Sure. Well, there are three major audit groups out there. The one that's the largest, the one that will direct your viewers to, at least for now, is the America First Audits. They've got a one-stop shop to get patriots involved, basically find their digital quarters and get involved in the election audit movement. And so
on Telegram, to be clear?
Yes, sir. That's on Telegram. And last time I was with Steve on air, we had about 50,000 patriots that were in the various state chat groups. Now we're up to 75,000, and we have representation in 43 states in that group alone, that main channel of America First Audits. We have representation in all 50 states.
Let's walk through this. So let's suppose that I live in Orange County, California, hypothetically, right? And I want to put some pressure on kind of local board of elections there. How am I going to join your effort, and how are you going to direct me through the maze so that I can be talking to Californians in the chat room rather than everybody? How's that work mechanically?
Well, first you just got to download the app and get on Telegram. Once you get on Telegram, it's absolutely free. You'll look for at America First Audits. And at that point, you'll have a main administrator that can direct you to whatever state. So we have a state set up for California, and that would be at CAL Audit Chat. So if you're a Californian and wants to get involved, you go through the main channel, we'll direct you to your state. It's that easy. At that point, there's a little bit of an organic.
Let me ask you this question. Are these live chats, or are they kind of asynchronous chats where you can like put information in and come back in an hour and see? Are they live?
They are asynchronous. You can come back, so you can drop data, come back, check comments. It can feel very live because you can stay on there and monitor traffic nonstop. But there is the ability to create independent live chats in the sense that you could actually have people communicate to one another, and that's another function that Telegram provides.
And in the canon of Bannon, it's action, action, action. It's like if I'm in a specific community, what are my agency in terms of what can I do actually other than talk about what's going on? What's the action, action, action through these chat rooms? What are we trying to do here?
It's one of the major failures of, say, the Republican Party is that they're very good at command and control. They're not very good at spontaneous liberty. So we have to let these audit channels breathe because you've got a lot of patriots that don't want to go through the traditional channels. They're very distrustful. So we have to be very flexible on how we direct people because they're going to do whatever they want. And that also inoculates us from being attacked easily. So that's actually a good thing. But for example, one of the things that we can do is have people like Captain Seth Keschel, who is dropping statistical analysis within each of these state chat rooms. We can have someone like Lisa Draza-Smith, who's a former National Scindia Labs cybersecurity expert. She's also providing data. We've got Dr. Douglas Frank. So we've got experts that are communicating and giving this information that is reliable. I mean, these are expert mathematicians. With that, what we're doing is prompting each of our patriots to contact their county GOP, contact their Libertarian parties, and give them the information and confront them with it. So we can basically adopt Dan Schultz precinct strategy and make sure that we have the most informed patriot group out there to ensure that we have accountability. And if they don't want to play ball with us, we'll help support these folks, run them out of office.
And in terms of the administrators that are in place on these things, is this something that your organization does to recruit these administrators and you supervise them, or is it just organic? How does this work?
It's a little bit of both. So we have to account for infiltration. We have to account for trolls and bad actors. And so we're building protocols on how to identify trolls. You see a troll, you toss a troll. We have some white hats and some security experts that are doing vetting to create trusted admins and committees in each state. We have very good admins in many of the states. We're still developing it. So we actually have 50 skeletons in America First audits, but we're still looking for admins in seven states.
Well, we have
the structure. We have the chat channels for all 50 states. 43 are ready to go. We have seven more that we're actually trying to vet right now to make sure that we have the right admins and the right message discipline to ensure that we can keep these chats and channels clean. We're going to be under attack. We know that. So it's organic, but we have a plan to make sure that we have, healthy bots that can throw out the bad messages and people that are just there to start trouble, because we are seeing an uptick with that. We have the bad with the good.
And is your organization kind of organizing this, or, I mean, how many people do you have involved in this? Is there any funding or people helping with the donations? Is there any way you can solicit small donations or something to help finance this? Anything you want to share on that?
Well, all I can tell you is this isn't my organization. I am just a trumpet of sorts for the folks that have organized it spontaneously. But I know many of the admins that are responsible, at least on the main channels and the states that I'm involved in getting audits set up. So it's liberty at its best. So if people need donations or money, we basically direct resources and people do a call to arms. There's many times where we've asked for fundraising. So, for instance, we needed more funds for Arizona, and we were able to raise close to $285,000 over the past 2 weeks to ensure that they had the resources necessary there. And so this is just by us vetting
focus on that. Focus on that, David. Like, who are you raising funds for, and how was the money spent?
Well, Arizona, there are four major contributors to the audit that are through We the People groups. You've got the groups that were set up through Sidney Powell, through Lynn Wood, through Matt DiPerno, and I also believe that Patrick Byrne and General Flynn have organizations. There's non-disclosure agreements on just how detailed they can be in ensuring the accounting, but we vetted those four as good sources, and we know that the money is getting directly sent to Doug Logan, Cyber Ninjas, and the groups. And so those are the main four. There have been promises from the GOP to donate money, and we're having problems with confirming whether a dollar, a single dime, is going to these groups from the Republican Party.
Are you dealing, David, with the Republican National Committee and Ronna McDaniel on that, or when you're asking for Republican money? Or is it
we don't ask them. We know that they've basically fundraised, tens of millions of dollars for election integrity. Where they're spending that money, we don't have a clue. We haven't found out where one single dime has actually gone to these audits. So at least earlier on, there was a fundraising effort on behalf of the RNC to take people's money, but they're not putting it back in the audit. So we've steered everyone clear of the RNC and the Republican Party. We're going through these patriot groups because we can account for it. So Matt DiPerno, for instance, the $285,000 that was donated that I can speak to, I just got an update today from him and know that that's going directly to Cyber Ninjas in Arizona. So we're demanding accountability one way or the other.
So in Arizona, the calls to action, and we've got this problem with the Board of Supervisors there who are Republicans who are doing everything they possibly can to get in the way of the audits. Are there like specific call to actions to contact them, or what would be the ban in action?
I think it's really important,
David, that when you get, we want a million people in these things, okay? We'd love to see a million patriots basically going across the 50 states. It's important to have action, so these folks can do more than just chat, right? The mission really is change, not chat, right? So tell me, do you have like strategists who are like thinking about what each action is going to be in which states?
Yes. Well, Arizona's was one of our earliest audit chat groups. It's been around the longest, and we've got various. We also have Conservatives Take Action, which is another audit group. These folks are on the ball. So if we have a problem and we need to exert pressure on a judge, or we need to exert pressure on legislators, if we need to exert pressure on the bad ones and also lift up the good ones. We have calls to action where we'll give you an entire list of emails, phone numbers, and we can confirm that we'll get thousands of emails sent like that. Phone calls where they're actually turning off the phone lines and not receiving messages from patriots. So we have inundated these systems. And so to a large degree, Arizona, the audit there, we the people basically pushed and dragged many of these legislators. We had some that were on the go from day one, Mr. Borelli, Ms. Fan, and you had some others that I won't name that were fair weather, testing the air to see whether they wanted to get involved in the audit movements. They're now firmly a part of this because we the people have spoken up. But it's been through efforts in these channels to identify names, numbers, emails, and we activate these patriots. And Arizona, the reason why we're not going away is we had entire groups dedicating to watching the live feeds of the audits through these channels. And we are posting and sharing information. So video surveillance.
We buried the lead. We got to the best part towards the end of the interview. You're doing really patriots work here. David, I want you to keep us posted here on the War Room as your numbers grow. Everybody out there in War Room land, give this a try in your state and see how you can use your own agency to move things along. A telegram at America First Audits. I'm going to let you go now, David, because I want the last minute here to go off on a little bit of rant on what you said about the Republican Party, okay? Because here's the deal. Message to Rona McDaniel, message to Mitch McConnell, message to Kevin McCarthy, message to all you traditional Republicans who have had your head, I'll say in the sand, but I'm thinking something else, on this whole election issue. Mitch McConnell, you fool. You should have the Senate. You should be the Senate majority leader if you were smart enough to join hands with the people of this country and challenge these elections. You would have probably a 53-47 majority in the Senate. And Seth Kessel's told us that. David Clemens is trying to help you do that. Look, you got to get involved, RNC. Rona, we're holding your feet to the fire. Rona, we're holding your feet to the fire. Get into this. Help these guys out. Show me the money.
Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Support Mike Lindell. Okay, today, the theme basically, November 3rd movement. I think with the news from last week, I think we've turned a corner because we're beginning now to get hard results out that are consistent with the stuff that I projected in my reports. We're seeing folks like Tucker Carlson and Fox finally talking about this and not getting blowback from within, apparently, so they can maybe keep talking about it. We're going to get some more hot results next week, but I want to caution you here, as these results come out, the fight really is just beginning. We've seen Biden, we flushed him out this week. He's had to try to come to the rescue. Rachel Maddow wasn't enough, so they brought in Big Joe Biden, like wringing his hands, clutching his pearls. Hey, Joe, you stole the election. And you didn't steal it because you were asleep in your basement, but the folks who were behind you, well, you know who they are, stole this election. What I want to do now is go back and talk just briefly with Seth Kessel, who we talked with in the last segment. Seth, I want to ask you, what are the kind of surprises you're likely to basically get up on the board next?
People need to be diligent about going after every state, which is why we started an audit group for everything. Minnesota is a state that you have to believe that Donald Trump's campaign spent millions of dollars and time and energy going to campaign in Minnesota just so they could lose that state as badly as Mitt Romney lost it in 2012. So there's some hidden treasure out there. You have the Attorney General of Minnesota on Election Day late in the afternoon. This is Keith Ellison putting out a tweet saying they don't have the numbers to defeat Donald Trump in Minnesota, and you're telling me they didn't know that they were going to win the state by 7%. So not only do you have the 10 electoral votes there in Minnesota.
Seth, let me say something about Minnesota, because that was one I worked really hard on at the White House. The thing about Minnesota, like, but people think about Minneapolis and St. Paul kind of as, you know, like moderate areas, things like that. But what you have to understand about that state, if you go up to the Iron Range, that's where all the iron ore comes from to support all the steel mills that President Trump basically got up and running again with stuff like steel tariffs that I personally worked on. And there's a lot of logging up there. There's some areas there which are very mineral rich that the president developed. So we thought, based on everything I was seeing, that we would win that state. So you're telling me, Seth, based on your numbers, that's likely what happened. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. So Pennsylvania and also Iowa, based on their voter registration trends and their recent voting history, reflects the same trends in Minnesota, with the working class moving heavily towards the Republican side, and also Trump reconsolidating the traditional base, the conservative base, the suburban base even. You can look in the Texas suburbs, 20-30% vote increases for Trump in the suburbs, as well as Georgia, which makes – and other things that people are going to dig up. You know, we're not even looking at states Trump won. I already mentioned North Carolina. The registration data and the trends for North Carolina suggested a 6 to 8 point Trump win, not a 1 point Trump win. Texas, you have 1.4 million new Democrat votes. So Biden gained 1.4 million votes, which is double their previous vote record gain. We have Tarrant County, Texas, which flipped for the first time in 56 years for an anti-energy campaign as Trump put up a Republican vote record. Florida, the entire panhandle trended several points towards Joe Biden, even though you have massive Republican registration numbers and Democrat extinction in the panhandle. So people are not paying attention.
Here, to be clear here, Seth, what your numbers are saying at the 30,000-foot level, is these are anomalies that are likely attributable to election fraud.
Absolutely, because when Republican nominees are not popular with the base, you see exactly what you saw in 08 with McCain flat to Bush, and then 12 Romney flat to McCain, and then Trump 1.0 flat to Romney. And you have a massive increase for Trump, where since 1878, you've never had a nominee gain votes and not be reelected. Well, we need action. So I'm going to say right now, the lieutenant governor of Texas has known about these numbers in Texas for 7 months. And we've had no action, even though there was a $1 million reward put out for information about election fraud. Florida was over a 6-point Trump victory.
Why is it the lieutenant governor that's pivotal in Texas, not the governor or the attorney general?
Well, he is widely considered, that office is considered to be the most powerful office in Texas, very influential. He's had a lot of sway. Dan Patrick's had a lot of sway with the grassroots conservative base. And, you know, obviously we had the crazy election night of November the 3rd, but with Texas being still almost 6 points in the Trump column, it's something that's overlooked. But the margin in Texas was eaten into by 300,000 votes, even with a record Republican vote gain, and also the entire Rio Grande Valley and even El Paso County trending Republican. Massive losses.
All right, Seth, we're going to close out here. Anything for your social media, any way to get a hold of you, see your stuff?
Yes. I'm on Telegram, at Real S. Keschel. That is my channel, K-E-S-H-E-L. And I have a Twitter handle, at S. Keschel, but I'm using that less and less as I found out just how much they suppress dissent.
Well, you got to get on Getter, G-E-T-T-R. Get that app today. Everybody on the War Room, get that app, because they won't suppress your stuff. It's the Twitter killer. Peter K. Navarro in for Stephen K. Bannon. Honored to serve here on the War Room today. Stephen K. Bannon will be back with you Monday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. You have a great weekend. And you are over, 'cause we're taking down the CCP.